This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
November and December of each year, there is always a very cool way to learn about and support local charities.
We'll get background and details from the executive director of Give Pikes Peak.
Plus, how are we doing on cutting carbon emissions?
All that and more on this episode of Loving the Springs, the podcast where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
I'm Al Brody.
And I'm Dave Gardner.
We're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
We're recording this episode on October 25th of 2024, and real quickly I want to mention to you, especially our special guest, we're still looking for a third co-host who doesn't look and sound like the two of us. So if you know anyone or you are such a person, send an email to lovingthespringspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Dropped boom on the boomers.
Yeah. Replace us, if you wish. But today, we have a local hero and a great cause to celebrate. And we're always trying to celebrate the best of Colorado Springs. So you fit right in, Victoria. We've got Victoria Norton. She's the executive director of Give Pikes Peak.
That's correct. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks.
Is Give Pikes Peak a slightly different name? It used to just be Give, didn't it?
It used to be Indie Give.
I thought maybe that was a nickname, but that was the official name.
No, the official, you know, on the books name was Indie Give there for a while.
Okay, because It was started by the Colorado Springs Independent.
It was in 2009. The Colorado Springs Independent started the Give campaign as just a philanthropic project of their organization.
Thanks to the old Indy for doing that.
That's
right.
Is it
the Indy or was it John Weiss himself?
It was the Indy.
It was the whole.
Of course, the Indy was in a lot of ways. It was John Weiss.
That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it became such a big part of what they were doing that they ended up cycling it off into its own 501c3.
Yeah.
And so that's when the campaign itself became a nonprofit.
I know you've got some great stats to brag about. Why don't we start with that?
Well, like you said, we've been around here in Colorado Springs serving the nonprofit community since 2009. And since that time, we've raised $18.5 million for local nonprofits. Over the years, organizations are, they joined the campaign for a couple of years, or, you know, some of them have been doing it from the very beginning. This will be their 16th year participating. But we've had about 256 nonprofits who participated in the campaign throughout that time period since 2009 to help raise that money for them.
That's a really kind of a pretty special program. It's like the nonprofits that are represented this year, they're like the class of 2024, right?
That's correct. So yeah, we have nonprofits apply to be a part of the campaign every year. This year, I have 53 nonprofits who are returning. So it's people who've done it, you know, maybe this is their second year, maybe it's their 15th year that they're doing it. So 53 that are returning. And then this year, we have 10 brand new nonprofits that it's their first time being in the campaign.
And they have to apply and qualify. You vet them.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we kind of like, that we're proud of, is that these organizations that we're putting up and that we're giving this platform to kind of have that Give stamp of approval because they do apply. And we have a review committee from around the community. We look at their financials. We take kind of a deep dive into their financials. We look at their board. We look at their staff makeup. Do they have the capacity to be in the campaign? Because we want the campaign to be a benefit, to be a gift to them, not a burden to them. And sometimes if they don't have enough staffing, then it can just be too hard. So we're not just looking to see if they're on the straight and narrow, but we're also just making sure that the campaign can be helpful to them. So we have a review committee that checks out all those applications every year, and then we invite a class every year to be a part of it.
Yeah, so if you're kind of insane and you're looking for a fly-by-night nonprofit to donate to, you're not going to find them here.
Correct. Yeah. So we're looking for somebody that we know is making an impact in our local community. We want to make sure that what they're doing is affecting our community in a positive way. And so I think it's one of the things that makes Colorado Springs such a great community is that we have such a vibrant, thriving nonprofit scene here.
Do you have an example of one of the newly chosen?
Yeah. So there's a new one that we had this year that I really like their mission. They're called Code for Outdoor. So it's Code for. And so they are an organization that works with first responders. And so people who are kind of on the front lines of our city, and they're seeing things every day that maybe can be fairly traumatic. And one of the things that they do to support them is to get them out into nature.
So that's fantastic.
Isn't that amazing? So they're taking them out on hikes. They're taking them on some big adventures as well. But this is a brand new organization into fundraising publicly like this. They've had great local support from their people in their own community already, but the average person in the streets here in Colorado Springs doesn't know about Code for Outdoor. So our job is just to give them a megaphone and to let the city learn about what they're doing.
Give it up for first responders.
Right.
Pretty cool. I know that Give introduced me to Rocky Mountain Field Institute.
Right.
Rumphy, one of my favorites, and they're probably one of your longest running.
Yeah, they've been in for a very long time. Yeah, and they're back again
this
year.
They're back again?
Yep, they're there.
Yeah, it works for them.
Yeah. So we have 11 different categories. Both of those that we just mentioned, Code for Outdoor and Rimpy, are in the Great Outdoors category. But we have 11 categories total. So we have everything from Youth in Action with like the Youth Documentary Academy. We have veterans. So we're working with Project Healing Waters, which teaches fly fishing to veterans who've experienced trauma. We also have the Sea Art Make Art category. So we have people that are working within our arts community here as well. And a host of others of Build Community and Getting Well and things like that. So organizations that have a really broad appeal. So there's something for everybody in the Give campaign.
Sounds great.
Are perks still a pretty big part of the program?
Yeah. So we really like to not only work with our local nonprofit community, but also our local business community. We want giving to be fun and to be easy and rewarding. And so we partner with local businesses and they offer up small perks for our donors. So we have 7 different tiers of perks that you can get. If you're at the highest level and you donate over $5,000, you get a free month pass to City Rock Climbing Gym. Hmm. If you're at one of the lower levels, say you're just doing a $25 donation, you get a couple of different perks. You get $5 to Bread and Butter Neighborhood Market, or you get 2 tickets to go see the movie at the Garden of the Gods Visitor Center, things like that. So we have lots of businesses that partner with us to help promote the campaign and just to show the community how philanthropic they are.
Recognize this.
There you go. Yeah, you got some swag.
Rumphy mug there.
My Rumphy insulated water bottle.
There you go.
That's great.
Yeah.
On my phone, I can contribute to political campaigns just by double-clicking and paying through my Apple phone.
Right.
Can you contribute that way? So it's an app that automatically has all your information just for political campaigns.
Oh, yeah. We're not that sophisticated yet in our technology.
Okay.
But what we do have is the campaign website, which is givepikespeak.org, is a chance for you to go and learn about all the different nonprofits that are in the campaign. But we make it really easy because your checkout page looks more like a shopping cart. You know, 64 nonprofits that are on there this year, and you can go and choose $10 to Rimpy or $10 to Code for Outdoor or $100 to the Pikes Peak Philharmonic. You know, so you have all these different options. And then it just gives you one total. So at the end, you're making a $500 donation, but it's going to maybe 5 different organizations. Mm-hmm. And so you just get to do one transaction, one tax receipt that you got to keep track of. And then in that tax receipt become your reward perks. So we just try to make it really easy. And then we on the back end take care of getting that donation to where it needs to go in the end. Perfect. And all the money that we're raising is general operating because we believe that the nonprofits know best how to spend the money that supports them. And so we let them have that as an unrestricted just grant that goes towards what they're doing.
So at that website, you can pretty much get the full story on the nonprofit and, of course, a link to their website if you want to go dig deeper, right?
Yeah. So all of their social media links, most of them have a video that you can kind of watch what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They kind of tell you what they've been doing, kind of what their goals are for this next year. So you can learn all about them there. And then you just get to make that one transaction and support as many of them as you want.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. So we missed your launch. You had a big launch party on
November 1st.
November 1st.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It was amazing. We've got great local partnerships, one of which is with Bristol Brewing, and they're doing a fun growler donation right now. So you can go buy a growler, and then you get to choose which nonprofit your donation supports. And so you get a growler, you get 10 half price refills, and you get to make a $25 donation to
That's
a nonprofit.
Great. That is really super great.
Yeah.
This runs all the way through December, all the way to
Go through January 3rd.
January 3rd.
Yeah. So it starts November 1st at midnight and goes all the way till January 3rd at midnight. We always tack in a couple of extra days just for people who maybe were traveling and they forgot to get on there. It's the craziest thing, but every year from January 1st to January 3rd, we raise almost exactly $30,000 extra for people in the campaign. So we're going to add
those
3 days in.
Days.
It's worth a couple days added on there.
Yeah, so I hope you'll kind of keep us posted. We'll check in for updates from time to time. Oh, the last time that I had time to pay attention was probably right before 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And the give season was full of a lot of events. All of the nonprofits organized these big events, and they were really fun to go to. And it was to generate a little bit of extra excitement, let you see some of the perks and learn more about the organization. But COVID seems to have killed.
COVID changed the face of fundraising in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It really did for a lot of the in-person things.
So since that, you've...
Yeah, so we do this big launch party that brings lots of people together. But one of the things that I love about the gift campaign is for the nonprofits, and you may have experienced this yourself, is that not only are you getting the perks of using the platform and the fundraising apparatus, but the workshops that we do for the nonprofits during the year bring us all together as a community. So you get this great ability to meet other people in the city who are doing the same kind of work that you're doing in the fundraising realm, but they're also giving you a chance to collaborate. So we do have some organizations that collaborate on these events together. The best way to kind of find out about those is just to follow our social media. So check out for Give Pikes Peak and the Give campaign, and we'll blast it out there whenever they get scheduled.
Okay, we are loving the Springs.
That's
and
right.
You're here for the organization, but you're also a person in our community that looks like you love Colorado Springs.
I do.
Tell us what you love about it.
You know, I moved here about 6 years ago and I mostly lived in the South most of my life. My accent doesn't give me away too bad, but not only do I just love the weather and the beautiful space that we get to live in, but I love just the opportunities that it's brought for my family. The school systems here have been amazing for us. Advocate for special needs, and the way that he gets to participate in school is amazing. And it just is what was given to him the day when we got here. And that was incredible for us as a family. We also have great access to good medical care here for him, which is a real big perk for us. But I love the ability to send my kids down the street to go to the store by themselves, that I feel safe having them here. I love having my family I live close to Garden of the Gods, so I can hop out my backyard and walk down to the Garden of the Gods, which is amazing. It's a combination of not only just the beautiful spot that we live in, but the community and the community focus that we have here.
So, givepikespeak.org.
That's right. So you can learn about all these amazing nonprofits that make our community so special.
Well, Victoria, thanks so much for joining us and sharing this and for doing the good work. We appreciate that.
Yes. Thank you, Victoria.
Yeah. Thanks for giving me the chance to come in and talk to your audience.
All right, Al, it's time for the Elevate the Rest segment. And something came out yesterday. The UN Emissions Gap Report for 2024 was released. And the news was a little bit disturbing, so I thought it warranted a little chat. It's not specific to Colorado Springs, but it's certainly an item of interest.
So I believe, as the information kind of illustrates, that we're headed towards a disaster climate-wise. But there is some good news. So I'll let you start with the facts that you may have to share. But I have a little bit of hope. So
first, I want to just share a quick little montage of clips from a few different news sources about this that might get your attention. So have a listen.
A new UN report warns that the world faces catastrophic climate consequences under current policies. It says the world is on a path to warm more than 3 degrees Celsius, or 5.4 degrees Fahrenheit, by the end of the century. That's double the 1.5 degrees Celsius cap that countries agreed to in Paris nearly a decade ago.
We are way off target when it comes to how dire things are.
We're not making progress. Actually, we are making things more and more high risk, potentially even unmanageable for humanity.
All right. In a way, that's shocking. There's been a lot of discussion over the last 6 or 8 months, I suppose, about scientists finally admitting that this 1.5 degree Celsius goal that they were hoping to keep us under. And by the way, most people listening to this don't really have a strong sense about what 1.5 degrees Celsius really is. 1.5 degrees Celsius is 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a significant rise in average temperature. Anyway, they've been talking about giving up on it. And now here this report says, well, the track that we're on, we're going to double that, which means a lot more sea level rise and a lot more of the problems with, well, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres did a good job of summing it up in his announcement about this. Record temperatures, monster hurricanes, forests becoming tinderboxes, record rains resulting in biblical floods. So it's not good news.
And it's not just that it's happening. I think most people agree that things are changing, especially if you live in Florida.
Hard to miss.
It's kind of hard to miss. In North Carolina and many other places, we've experienced fires that we've never seen before. What I think is starting to change finally is people are accepting that, oh yeah, what these scientists have been saying all along is this is anthropomorphic climate change, meaning it's human caused.
Yeah.
And I think that in and of itself, the fact that we're admitting that we may have something to do with this is a change. So on the positive side, the Azores just this past week has announced that they are forming a marine protected area. I think it's 380,000 kilometers. Don't quote me on that number, but it's the largest marine protected area in the North Atlantic right now or ever. And the people from the Azores that made this happen, and it's fisher people and it's industry and it's government all coming together saying, we're starting to understand this. We're getting that something's happening. And they agreed to protect an area of the ocean. There's a goal that I believe 100 countries have signed up to. And that is to make 30% of the world's oceans marine protected areas, meaning there's no extraction or very limited, very specific extraction in those areas. And if we can save 30% of the world's oceans, think about it. We're mostly ocean. The planet is mostly ocean. So 30% supposedly is enough to preserve the oceans. And what happens is species start coming back, and they call them keystone species. So on the land in our area, a keystone species would be beavers. But in the ocean, it's whales. And there's a concept, I guess, called a whale pump, because there's no actual pump. But the fact that whales exist in the ocean, they feed low and they poop high. And when they poop high, they don't poop pie, they poop high. Their poop feeds these microorganisms that feed plankton and other things and creates this biodiverse ecosystem.
Yeah.
So the oceans, which are really where the answer lies. I mean, the earth is mostly ocean. It will be kelp. It will be the fast-growing seaweeds that help us more than anything else. Forests are good, but the biggest forest is actually in the ocean. It's the kelp beds. So we have some positive news in a country. And now the next step is they're going to Bermuda. They're going to meet in Bermuda, and hopefully Bermuda will do the same thing as the Azores have done. And if Azores did it, Azores belongs to Portugal. And if Portugal does it, then maybe Spain will do it. And if the Iberian Peninsula does it, then hopefully Europe will do it. And it'll hopefully catch on. And maybe we will reach the 30% of the world's oceans being protected areas by 2030.
Well, that is good news. And I think that's important work. I don't want to rain on your parade, but I wonder, though, whether marine preserves can protect the animals and the biodiversity at all from the effects of the warming ocean and the ocean acidification. I mean, that's basically a global happening thanks to the carbon emissions.
Well, we've seen that the Earth is extremely resilient. When fires happen, when other disasters happen, nature has an amazing way of bringing things back to life. It may not be human life, but it is life, and the Earth will sustain. I think most people realize that humans are the problem. We are the cancer on the planet, whether we want to admit it or not. The Earth was doing really well without us. And in 100 years, basically, the past 100 years, we have managed to do a lot of damage. Hopefully, this information gets people to think about it.
So I want to make a couple of points getting back onto this climate subject. If you hear Celsius and you're in the United States, you're thinking Fahrenheit. So what you need to do to turn that into Fahrenheit is multiply the temperature change in Celsius by 1.8. So the news yesterday that we're on course to probably have a 3.1 Celsius increase in global average temperature over pre-industrial levels, that actually computes to 5.58 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's just important to know that. And also that that's the global average. And over land, it will be warmer. And in fact, scientists estimate in some parts of the Earth, the temperature increase will be as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
We don't have to go very far for that, because this was the hottest year on record for Denver. And I don't know if that's true for Colorado Springs, because I haven't heard it that way. But it probably was. And if Denver's had their hottest year, and Phoenix is still having over 110 degree days, they've had more than they've ever had.
Yeah.
Phoenix has been hot for as long as I can remember, but not hot like it's hot now.
Yeah.
And for as long as it's hot, and during the day it stays hot.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, I reviewed several news reports about this, and the general message out there is that we're putting all our faith and hope in technology solutions. There's really little or no mention of the things that each and every one of us can engage in. And you brought up some good things. If you're a marine biologist, you can be working on marine preserves and things like that. But those are, you know, wherever there are experts, it's kind of a silo, and they're working on some of the symptoms or the impacts of the climate disruption that we're engaged in. And even in our last episode, when we were talking to River Gasson, the congressional candidate, and I asked her about climate change, a lot of what she talked about was things to do about really mitigate some of the impacts. She didn't really headline her thinking with what can we do to stop pumping as much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere as we are. And the same thing here, that everybody seems to be hoping that we'll come up with technology that will reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that we emit. But here we are, just your average citizen, wouldn't you like to be able to do something about it? And I just want to mention briefly that there are some things we can do, because otherwise we're waiting. We're waiting for the right president to be elected, or the right Congress, or the right amount of political will in order to have these big system changes. But we shouldn't wait for the system change. There are things we can do. And by doing those, I think we'll give some of the politicians permission to take faster action in the system changes.
So give us an example, because yeah, everything that I think of that we can do means we do less, we have less, we want less, we live with less. Less is the word.
Yeah. So thanks for asking that.
What can we do?
You know, there's some easy stuff, because we waste a lot. So what I want to suggest is we just attack the waste. By eliminating waste, you don't have to give up anything. And there's no pain of wasting less. Sitting in your car with the motor running while you're chatting with your neighbor, while you're picking up your kids at school.
And technology has at least sort of fixed that. Electric cars, other than the climate control inside the vehicle, are off when they're on.
Thankfully, yeah.
Unless you have lights, yeah, or air conditioning or something. So there's that, the engine shutoff. I mean, most of the cars built today, not all, but many of them, the engine shuts off by itself.
But that's not most of the cars on the road today. So there's still a lot of cars on the road today with the internal combustion engine idling.
The
frequently.
People with money can make these changes, and the people who don't have a significant amount of available cash really can't. And the beauty for rich people, for affluent people, is climate change is going to take out the bottom first, the poorest people on this planet. It doesn't really matter because climate change isn't going to care about what area you're in. My daughter, who is a marine biologist, says we're all going to be climate refugees. And if you start to look around, people in Florida are refugees, people in North Carolina, even if their house didn't get affected by the actual flooding. And I have friends that live high on a hill in a town in North Carolina. Their house is fine. They're fine. But they have no community. The community was washed away. Yeah. So they're definitely impacted, even though the immediate impact didn't do anything to them. It totally destroyed their ability to remain in their home, which makes them climate refugees. Even though they survived, they had the affluence to be high on the hill, but they still don't have a community.
That's not going to be that much fun. You know, it might get you a little later, but, you know, they're not going to be making new movies on Netflix. It can't just be rich people high on the hill growing your food. We all have to make this work together. And being rich ultimately isn't going to insulate you from...
Well, other than a few crops, and I think grapes for wine, coffee, maybe some teas, most agriculture is accomplished near rivers. That's where the fertile soil is.
Sure.
That's where agriculture happens, in most cases. So where are we going to see floods? We're going to see floods in our agricultural zones. And where do the people that work the agricultural zones live? Pretty close to that.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody has the Aspen-Carbondale ability where the people who live in Aspen live in Aspen. The people who work in Aspen live in Carbondale and other towns outside of Aspen because they can't afford to live in Aspen. That's where you're going to see it. Carbondale will get wiped out. Aspen will be just fine. But who's going to do the work in Aspen if the people in Carbondale get wiped out?
That's pretty funny. You're sidetracking me, but it's a great tangent. But back to wasting less. Today, we drive instead of biking, walking, or taking public transportation. Drive less. Combine trips. Don't make trips that are unnecessary. How many of us actually could send our kids to school on foot or on bike when instead we're driving them to school? There are ways we can burn a lot less fossil fuels, and that actually improves everybody's life. It's not giving up something, and it's not painful. So I would recommend thinking about things like that. Leaving lights on in your house. There's just no pain attached to turning off the lights when you leave the room. There's really not much pain attached to easing back on the thermostat a little bit, wearing a sweater instead of keeping the heat as high in the wintertime and the opposite in the summer. How many people leave their computers on all the time? How hard is it to turn your computer off or put it to sleep if you're going to be away from it for an hour or two? And we waste food. And, you know, the agriculture producing our food has a big carbon footprint, and apparently Americans waste about 30% of their food. So there's things you can do when you order at a restaurant. You know, usually the portions are too big. So split the meal. Make sure you take a to-go container with you and take the food home. Don't just leave food on your plate at a restaurant to be thrown away. And we could all, those of us who have this carnivorous habit, we could all stand to eat less meat, producing meat. Especially beef has a really high carbon footprint.
That is a very controversial topic.
It is, but it's not really painful to eat less meat, and there's lots of good veggies, and your body will thank you for that. Vegans will tell you, go vegan and save the planet. Well, that's not enough, and you really don't have to go vegan. You know, Americans could just cut way back on meat and make a significant dent in the carbon emissions of
our food
system.
It's true. I think we saw the Biden administration come out of the corner and say, we should really consider shrinking the beef industry. And that turned into the soundbite of, Biden wants to take away your hamburgers.
Yeah.
And that became the rallying cry. So I think many people who survive on hamburgers, and we're talking a lot of people. There's a lot of McDonald's, Whataburgers, and Burger King, and all these other hamburger joints in this community. If you say all of a sudden, eat fewer hamburgers. Maybe Chick-fil-A will feel happy about that. But I think most people would be in serious distress. How do you change that behavior? I can change myself. I can encourage my friends to eat a certain way, but I can't have any impact on them.
No, just inspire them. Invite them over for a meal and show them that it doesn't have to have a lot of beef. You know, it's an expensive way to eat, surviving on fast food. You may think it's cheap, but it's cheaper to eat healthy food. It's a lot cheaper to eat fruits and vegetables than it is to eat at McDonald's.
You know, as a mostly plant-based organism that I consider myself, I don't know that I agree with that. If you eat the standard American diet and you just go and get the Happy Meal for your kids and the quarter pounder, although that's not the greatest thing right now because of the listeria or whatever the microbiome in that killed one person. If you just eat those things, like if you have lunch and your lunch is a hamburger and a Coke, as opposed to like a vegetable sandwich, there's not many vegetables. And I don't know where you can go. You can't go to a farmer's market and get cheap produce. You can't go to Whole Foods and get cheap produce. You can't go to the commissary and get cheap produce. So I want to believe that.
An apple. Have an apple. I guarantee you an apple, a single apple, is cheaper than a hamburger at any of those fast food
Even
joints.
Even as a plant-based guy, and I admit that I am, given I have to make it through the day and I get to eat a hamburger or an apple to sustain me for the rest of the afternoon, I'm taking the hamburger.
All right. You heard it here first. Anyway,
so
think about it.
That's the problem.
Yeah, well, think about
let's be real.
Think about it. We keep coming up with reasons not to do the right thing. And I just would like to inspire people to think harder about it. Hey, real quickly, I want to share some upcoming events. Victoria told us that they are doing much fewer Give events, but do check out givepikespeak.org for a few Give events that are coming up probably. I also want to mention November 15th, Retro Rewind, an adult prom presented by Citizens Project, which is a good local nonprofit. And I'll put links in the show notes to all of these. November 16th, the Youth Documentary Academy, they're actually one of the Give nonprofits. They're doing on November 16th their annual world premiere of new films produced by the class of 2024. I do that at the Cornerstone Art Center at Colorado College, and that's always pretty interesting. And then this sounds like fun. I'm a fan of Millibo Art Theater, and on November 18th there, you can join award-winning singer-songwriters Edie Carey and Sarah Sample celebrating the release of their new album, Lantern in the Dark, Songs of Comfort and Lullabies. So those are my event tips. You got any for us, Al?
I just have, you know, if you had an opportunity to go to the Rocky Mountain Women's Film Festival.
You've just been, haven't you?
I've just been. I spent an entire day there and was thoroughly impressed. But as a person with a Y chromosome, I have to admit that one day of it was about all I can handle. Huh. One day of movies would be more than I can handle, I think, at any time. But it was such a different perspective. And these are women-made films, not about women necessarily, but women-made films. The perspective is so different than what you normally see that it was challenging for me.
Wow.
And in a good way, but a taxing way. It really made me think about things, and having a daughter and having a spouse, it was challenging. So my wife went to the night before and the day after, and I was like, I'm good. One day is enough.
You had to give up your toxic masculinity.
You know,
I know that's not what you're talking about.
Well, maybe it is, but it's interesting to see femininity. If toxic masculinity exists, then there's the potential for toxic femininity. And to watch the perspectives go in that direction made me ponder whether, am I being a toxic male, or am I just being a human with power to do certain things? And given women having power, what will they do? Will they be competitive beings trying to be better than others? Or will they be all about the collective? And I think that was the dilemma that I really focused on. And the different films handle it in different ways. It was a mentally taxing challenge to sit through all those films.
I know for me, one of the highlights of going is the conversations in between the films. Did you have some interesting...
Absolutely. There's definitely that. People saying they absolutely love the film and me thinking, well, I like the film, but... and having that conversation. And it was interesting because... I don't think I was wrong, and I'm not saying the films were wrong. It's just seizing another perspective, and maybe that's what we need to do with the environment, is take a look at maybe we're just looking at this wrong. And you talked about, you know, the difference between Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Uh-huh.
Well, if America ever failed at something big time, it was when we tried to go
metric
to the metric system.
Yep.
You know, as a cyclist, and I know I'm off on a tangent, as a cyclist, we have tires that have inches, and then we have not an eighth of an inch, not a sixteenth of an inch, 0.2. 6.2 inches. Who does 6.2 inches? Who metricizes inches? But we do. I have a new tire. It's 24 inches by 6.2 inches. So talk about, we're totally screwed up. You know, transition, converting, that's difficult. What's not difficult is the metric system. What's not difficult is centigrade, because Celsius gives that credit to one person like Fahrenheit did. But centigrade was part of the metric system. It's 10-based. What a great thing. Anyway,
yeah,
a tangent.
It is sad that we failed at that. So that's it, man. This has been a pretty amazing episode, I think. Thanks for listening to Loving the Springs. Be sure to follow this podcast to keep up on
what's going on,
what's going well,
and what's going wrong.
Share it with your friends, too.
And don't forget to visit Studio809Podcast.com to check out all of our fine community podcasts. Find your new local favorite there.
We'll catch you next time.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.